This sea of things I'm going to say dumb stuff into. I love it.
I'd say one dumb thing for each.
Yeah,
recorder.
I'll just say, I'll go to each recorder and say something very dumb.
How you doing?
Hi, good.
Hi, Ben. So as your second movie as director, how do you feel your craft has improved, and what did you learn on doing Tammy that you didn't apply to The Boss?
Well, I think, here, I'll put this down so I don't look like a full coffee addict. What did I learn? Well, I learned that people are going to ask you questions all day, and that you don't have to answer all of them right away. And I was able to sort of see the bigger picture and kind of what I needed in coverage or shots or like where we were going to go from one thing to the next a little more clearly. So it made me feel less stressed, which is generally, I think, a good thing in your life in any case, and especially when you're putting together a comedy. Like, I think I felt a little more like under control in my own skin. The first movie, you know, it's hard not to feel a little bit like, oh my gosh, they let me get in here. I hope they don't fire me today. So with this one, I felt 30% less likely to be fired.
Hi, Ben.
Hi.
I was wondering, I'm sure there's probably a story to the turf war sequence.
Yeah.
Getting the child stunt doubles and stuff.
Right.
Was that something that was difficult or challenging, or how did that all come together?
That was one of the more challenging parts of the movie. It's also one of my favorite parts of the movie. We knew that we wanted to make a Gangs of New York style street fight with children and adults. And, you know, the logistics behind that get a little bit tricky. So we had to find, we strategically put stunt women who were moms, like the woman who kicks the other woman in the face. just because that's what you do. You kick your person in the face. And then we also had stunt women come in for the children. And then we would face replace. Like, there was a lot more, a surprising amount of visual effects in this movie. That was, and again, going to the, luckily it was my second movie, so I felt a little bit less overwhelmed and more easily, more capable of like, okay, well, this person knows what they're doing. I don't know how to face replace, so they're going to tell me. Yeah.
Great. Thanks.
I have a question about the MPAA. When you're in the script stage or shooting, when you decide that it's going to be, that the language is going to be what it's going to be, is it more freeing to just sort of let that go when you're making it?
Yeah, you know, when you know that you have an R rating, you know that you can say a lot of things. But I also like for every, this is going to sound crazy, but I like every swear to have value. Like if somebody's just dropping F-bombs for no reason, I usually think it's a little bit lazy. Not that it's wrong or whatever, I'm not a prude, but for us it was just sort of like, okay, well, we actually did a pass towards the end of post where we were like, do all of these need to be here? And we actually took a bunch of swears out just because we felt like if Michelle is going to swear, or certainly if a kid is going to swear, that it better have an impact, it better be funny or jarring or do what we want it to do. Otherwise, we're leaving it in there for the wrong reason. But it's definitely freeing to know you can say what you want, and you can. That means you have a lot more ammo on the day.
Hi, I'm Patrick from Germany.
Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, when did you first dream of becoming a filmmaker? Was that something that you wanted to be when you were a child, or did it more happen, you know, over the years, thanks to Melissa's race profile and stuff?
I think it happened more over the years. It was less filmmaking. I directed theater, and that's where I came from. You know, Melissa and I both were in the Groundlings Theater, where you write and perform your own material. You buy your own wigs. You buy your own outfits. You don't get paid. You know, it's one of the best places I've ever been, and it was an incredible proving ground and learning ground. But as for like, did I dream of like creating films? You know, I would make a couple things here and there, shorts and stuff. But what I really loved was directing theater, and I think writing and directing theater was what led me into filmmaking. And then just once I got to that stage, I was able to find people who really helped me understand the craft a little bit better. And obviously I have so much more to learn, as do we all. But yeah, that was sort of how I came into it.
Michelle Darnell evolved out of the Groundlings 15 years ago.
That's right.
Can you talk a little bit about how she has evolved and how the character that's changed at all in the 15 years?
Well, we were able to get her cooler clothes and a better wig, for sure. But as far as like the character, I mean, Melissa knew what this character was 15 years ago. So in terms of the essence of her, she hasn't changed much at all. But in terms of what we were able to do with, Kate Shorter makeup, Linda Flowers hair, Wendy Chuck costumes, and all the people around, their whole staffs, they're really good at their jobs. And then Melissa really knows what she wants, that we were able to kind of, I think, lift the character but keep the essence of it.
Was there a reason why she always wore turtlenecks?
Because Michelle Darnell loves turtlenecks. She does not have a hidden neck tattoo. That was questions we would get when we would screen the movie. What is she hiding? She likes turtlenecks, man. And Melissa was like, she just likes turtlenecks. I don't know what to do. Michelle Darnell loves turtlenecks. No problem.
You and Melissa obviously have collaborated together for many years. I'm curious, though, are there rules or techniques that you follow to keep your spousal dynamics safe in the work environment? Is it all unspoken? Do you just understand how to do it, or do you have to kind of think about how you're talking to your wife as opposed to talking to your leading lady?
Oh, interesting question. It would be interesting if we had like a 7-step plan. Well, step one for the morning. No, we don't have a... It's very... our behavior towards one another on the set is very much the same as our behavior is off the set. So it's less of a delineation than you might think. We try to just treat each other every day respectfully, and we also mostly every day try to make each other laugh. So that's pretty much it. And then on set, it's the kind of same thing. And she knows I have a job to do, which is like, look at the monitors and figure out what's going on in terms of shots. And I know that she has a job to do, which is that she's acting in virtually every scene in this movie, and that's, there's a lot on her plate as well. So I think that we just try to really have a great time, which is the same thing we do in our marriage.
Do you see yourself directing a film without her one day, or would that be weird for you guys?
I would like to someday. The only thing is that directing involves so much travel that I really don't have a lot of interest in being away from my kids and Melissa for 4 months at a time, so... Right now, it's and also she's one of the funniest, best actors I've ever seen. So there's a lot of reasons to stick together. I mean, someday I think so, but I mean, I kind of it's hard to push forward that far in the future in my mind. But it's almost like the kids would have to be in school or something. It would have to be many years from now because I like it when we're all together.
You have a new writer in the script. Stage of this, how did the writing dynamic work with the three of you?
Well, Steve Mallory has been our really good friend for a long time. So Melissa and Steve actually kind of hatched the movie together. That she had the character, and Steve was the one who came to her and said, "Oh, wouldn't it be fun if you did a movie based on this?" And so they sat down at some coffee shop in LA somewhere and came up with basically what the movie is. I mean, in terms of its broad outline, the idea that this mogul falls from power and then gets her power back by starting a brownie troupe for profit. And then I came in later, and sort of was like, well, let's do this. And I'm pitching jokes and storylines and all this stuff. But as for the process, to fold in one of your best friends in the world is only a joy. And he's a super funny guy. So it was, without him, there would be no Michelle Darnell, that's for sure. The movie.
I'm just wondering if there are any other characters that are kind of percolating that you think you'll take from Groundlings to the cinematic stage, and what makes a character that you both worked on and make it cinematic, and make this person cinematic?
Right, that's a good question. I don't think there's anyone... I mean, there's this one character that we both love named Marbles, but I haven't figured out a way to put her in a movie or anywhere. That was just something we used to do just because I love the character so much. But I haven't figured it out. But so nothing on the horizon, no. Oh, I'm not sure.
Okay. Will there be a spin-off on TV of Michelle?
I don't believe so. I don't think so. She's fun. I would like to see her do something else, but I don't think a spinoff of TV is in the works.
Or a sequel.
Well, bring billions of people to see it, and we'll see about a sequel.
Do you remember the first time you, first of all, Melissa just sort of slayed you comedically when she was performing?
First time I saw her perform.
What was she doing? Can you kind of set that?
Yeah, we were in a level 3 writing lab at the Groundlings where you have to, we're in this back room. It was before they had this cool new space, and we're in this tiny room. And you had to just go up, and the teacher would give you like maybe an opening line or a phrase or it could be a title. I mean, it's something, and you had 15 minutes to write a monologue. And the very first monologue she did, she was a hopped up person who was sort of hitting on a guy at Kinko's and she was so desperate and vulnerable, and it was so funny and real. I was like, God, who's this lady? And my first thing was I was like this creepy guy in a jail, and I'm like, what the hell am I doing? But when I saw her first, the very first thing I saw her do, I was like, she's, you know, the best person I've seen in a long time. And not that there aren't amazing people all over the Groundlings, but she just really struck me as being great.
You remember the first time you saw her kind of kill in front of an audience and you realized, oh, she's really special?
Yeah, that was probably in our lab show at the Groundlings also. Like, you do a performance thing of this class, and she, the same monologue, because you do a monologue and then you do scenes, and her monologue went really, really well, and she was able to, like, figure out, like, she was just much farther progressed than I was. You know, she was able to figure out when do they need me to do something, when don't they? And she was able to play with the audience in such an advanced level. And we did a scene together in that level too, which is, I mean, this is like, it's got to be, I don't know, 18 years ago. And she was super funny in that scene. We were like these two disaffected kids. And she said, I ran into a friend of yours. And I go, who? And she goes, me. Oh boy. So she was great from a long time ago. Hi.
Well, first of all, I just want to let you know that I really love the movie.
Oh, thanks.
And your guys' collaborations just keep getting better and better, so I'm just very happy for you guys.
Thanks.
And on to the question. Peter Dinklage, you know, the choice of his character, I thought that was so cool. Can you elaborate on that choice?
Sure. I mean, I'm huge fan of Pete. He goes by Pete, which blows my mind. I always want to call him Peter or Mr. Dinklage. But now that I know him, I guess I can call him Pete. And I've been a fan of Pete's for a long time. You know, from, you know, The Station Agent, from obviously Game of Thrones, and all the work that he's been doing. And, you know, when the idea came that we needed a villain, you know, first, I think, you know what it was? I think first we were considering him for a smaller role, like a mean boss, you know, in the movie, actually played really well by Cecily Strong. It ended up being, it's like all the ways, the permutations that it takes. But then somebody said, what about Pete for Renault? And we're like, yep. Like, it literally was like an immediate, oh my God, yeah, of course. Like, because you needed somebody with that kind of gravitas who can, like, hold your attention. Like, he's really kind of he's such a good guy. And, he's such an actor's actor that I've always just admired him. And once we got him, it just felt like a perfect, perfect fit.
It was.
Oh, thank. Oh, good. I'm glad. He's great.
Hey, Ben. Melissa is an absolute genius when it comes to the physicality of her comedy. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to actually be around that on set? And it seems like it's been in a couple of her movies that her primary attack move is aiming for the jugular. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, sure. Well, she always wants to beat me up in a movie, that's for sure. Keeps the marriage good. Comes home like, oh, I feel great. I'm like, well, you beat the hell out of me all day. No wonder you feel great. But yeah, as for like physicality, I just, you know, when we're writing, and it's not just for Melissa, it's for anybody. As I get, you know, more familiar with having gone through the post-production process or whatever, like, there's not a lot of things that happen physically that you're going to cut out of a movie. What you're going to cut out of a movie is people talking forever. You know, so, like, if someone's having a fight, then if they start shoving each other, well, you're going to keep the shoves. And then you just figure out a way, like, how is that going to be funny? So I just basically try to put Melissa in a position to succeed. And so one of those ways that I try to do it is with anything physical. So whether even if it's a scene that doesn't have something physical in it, I'm going to pitch that we do something physical, and, you know, and then if she sparks to it, she'll do something great. And if she doesn't, that means there's probably not enough there to glom onto. So basically, it just, I love to watch her get physical with people, knock into people, jostle people's bosoms, whatever it might be, whether it's violent or aggressive or loving. With me, she tends to enjoy hitting me. But I just try to give her a shot where she can succeed. Yeah, that was a CG ball. So it was not a real ball, though Melissa kept suggesting that it should be a real ball. And I said, nope, we don't need it to be a real ball at all. It's because we've got it all mapped out, and I've talked to the editor, and you know the DP's all on board, and we're good. She's like, no, I think you should really feel it. And I'm like, no, I don't want to feel it. And then she whacks a tennis ball against the fence, and I'm like, okay, well, now you're being crazy. So she was like, oh, I just want you to feel, you know, so you can react. And actually, it did help, because then I was able to, like, jerk a little more, because I was actually always semi-scared she was going to hit me with a real ball. She did not.
Thank you very much, Vanessa.
Oh, thanks.
Great.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.